Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You tuned in to 411 Team, a weekly dive into issues that shape, shake, and shift our everyday lives. From classrooms to courtrooms, headlines to hallways, we unpack what matters to teens, families, educators, and other interested folks. 411 Team, a forum where minds meet and futures begin. What does it take to build something that lasts? Not just a business, but a legacy. For some, it begins as a lab. For others, in a classroom. But for one man along Florida's Gulf Coast, it began in the back of a rusted 1957 Plymouth station wagon. This is the story of grit, of curiosity, of defiance, and of family bond by saltwater and science. On this special Father's Day edition of 411 Teen, we honor a man who didn't just study the ocean, he built a life in it. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, and today we dive into the life and legacy of Jack Rudlow, saltwater, science, and survival. Welcome, Jack, to 411 Teen, and we also have Hunter, who is a employee there and has been there a long time. We have Cypress. Is Cypress there?
How you doing?
Good. His son and some interns. So we'll be talking to everyone. I'm going to start with Jack. Jack, take us back before Gulf Specimen existed. Who were you as a young man, and what pulled you toward the ocean and the natural world so intensely?
I think I was just almost like born that way, a clutching pair of hands, trying to grasp nature any way I could. I mean, from the time I was could just actually crawl, I was intrigued with turtles. My mother at one point was she was a registered nurse, and she brought us to a summer camp where she was doing the nursing, and she replaced the story, which I vividly remember. I don't know how old I was, but 5 or 6, but I turned over this rock and there were these 2 bull snakes underneath there. And first thing I did was I saw them and I just grabbed them by the necks, and I came running into the infirmary, coiling around my arms, and she said she lost all her maternal instincts and everything else and went tearing out the back door.
I would have been right with her. Okay.
Yes. So that's kind of okay. What I did. I raised up in a New York Brooklyn apartment next to a Prospect Park. I raised turtles and glass tanks, and it just started this way. So I really haven't changed since I was 2.
Yeah.
So here, that was the beginning, and then when I finally, I don't know, went through Florida State, went to try to do different things.
Well, let's
things
talk
like
about
that.
Florida State. Yeah. I know you'd already told me somewhat about it, but you were expelled from Florida State. And at that time, did that feel like a failure or just simply freedom?
Kind of both. But I mean, they had practically a royal expulsion of the drums beating me, walking me outside and taking away my greenhouse that I was growing sensitive plants in, and basically telling me never to darken the door again. And it was that kind of thing. I mean, I just had really no interest in sitting in a classroom. Still don't, have to teach in them sometimes. But, it was traumatic in one way, but my mother was very good this way. And, I said, I don't know what I'm going to do, or I don't think I want to go to college. I don't think I want to go any further and all that stuff. And she said, fine, don't. Do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So I did. And through one way or the other, I was a laboratory technician at FSU, working at the marine lab. They needed specimens. I had lived in Carabel, knew shrimpers and fishermen. So I was able to get a job collecting specimens for them to begin with. And then that evolved into Gulf Specimen. And that was one of the reasons I got kicked out of Florida State. They didn't like people doing commercial things or being
Yeah.
non-academics and do the stuff that I was doing. So, but
When did,
anyway.
well, I was going to ask, when did you realize, at what moment did you realize that you're going to build something on your terms, that you were marching to a different drummer and you were going to do your thing? Or did you realize that you just kept going and doing your thing?
Kept doing my thing, just sort of response like, hey, there's a market for some of these sea creatures, and I can sell them to biological supplies. And all of a sudden, I had a little money in my pocket, and I was doing it. And I was also getting fascinated, but with the life. And then I got a couple of lucky breaks. One of them was I got to know John Steinbeck because he had a, connection with Cannery. He wrote Cannery Row, which was about a biological collector, like what I was trying to do. And I corresponded with him, and he graciously wrote back. And then I was going up to Harvard. My brother was up there, and I got to know the museum people and other people in Boston University. And through them, I got an invitation to go to Madagascar on the Indian Ocean expedition and collect specimens. It's one of those things that when you're young, you can get away with a lot of stuff, people give you a chance. So the fact that I had all this trouble at Florida State and I had all this acceptance at Harvard and Yale and Smithsonian and all the other stuff and Steinbeck, and I'm sitting there weighing the two between our wonderful Florida State University and its anyway, and all the other stuff like that. So that's kind of the direction I went. And I was very lucky, very fortuitous that a lot of that
Good.
happened.
Now, Ann Rutlow was not just your partner in life, but also in science. How did that partnership shape what G, oh, well, I was going to say GSML, but for those who are listening, Gulf Specimen Marine Lab, how did that
Yeah.
partnership shape that? How did it
Okay.
become?
That started around 1969. So I'm sitting there in this shack slapping yellow flies with a few aquariums and tanks, trying to keep them going and selling specimens here and there. So I had this one customer from Mary Washington College, which was a student there, and her name was Anne Ida Miller. I didn't know her, really at all, but we would chat on the phone. And she was studying scallops, and she was studying that's the pea crab that lives inside the valves of the scallops. And so I would send her some scallops from time to time, and then we talk about it. Sometimes the scallops got there dead, and I'd try to replace it, and so on and so forth. Anyway, the bottom line is, when she was getting ready to go to graduate school, she applied to Florida, and she was interested in possibly going to the University of Miami or Florida State. But she saw that Panacea was near Florida State, and she was always intrigued, like many other people, including Steinbeck, with the name Panacea, which is synonymous with sort of a cure-all and all magic things happens and healing and that sort of thing. So she came down here and we eventually bumped into each other and identified her sea squirts for her. So she was happy at the time when she was doing her master's thesis in St. Joe. And then we were like-minded on environmental issues, which were strong in the 70s. And we got together. But she had the vision to say, hey, this is more than just fishmonging and selling specimens to schools and labs. This is a chance to educate and spread out to other people what's here. And that wasn't hard to do because, we'd come in with our shrimp boat. We had a little shrimp boat at that point. It came into the dock and it was unloading not shrimp, but it was unloading sea squirts and starfish and octopuses and a sawfish and so on. And so people would say, hey, what are you doing with this? Can we follow you back? And there'd be a few teachers in there. In fact, one local teacher and said came by and said, can I bring my class here? So mind you, Gulf Specimen was a shack at that point in time, that sometimes still is, but it didn't have the tanks and all that sort of thing, but it was starting. So teachers would bring their classes, but they'd also bring their classes and they had no bathroom except, one little toilet was in there with the 20 kids, hopping around on one leg or other and trying to get into it. And Ann said, well, we got to go ahead and we got to do something like this. So then we really made the decision to start weighing into it. So how do you take all the creepy crawlers that are crawling around in the tank? Well, then you've got to put signage up there and information, and then start talking about them and running field trips, and then it's turned into the.
Well, what has kept you? Excuse me, but what has kept you in Panacea for more than 50 years?
several things. First of all, I personally am a hardcore unemployable. Now, all these nice young people that are here, if they put it on their resumes and they get a letter of recommendation from us, they get a good job usually, and it's worked out pretty much every single time. But me, nobody wants to hire me. In fact, at one time I was up at the Smithsonian Magazine when Anne thought she was going to get a position up there in the National Cancer Institute. And saying, what would I do? And, you know, and I said, hey, could I get a job? And they just broke into laughter. And it's not no way. Back to Panacea. But I mean, you know, let's look at what Panacea was when I moved into it. It was just a bunch of dish houses, shacks, few docks that were cluttered up with, you know, crab traps and shrimp nets and all of that stuff and falling down. And basically, you know, it was also a lot of related families, but nevertheless, there was a handful of families that were all kins and cousins to each other and everybody else. It's still that way, but there was very little outside influence at the time. So I come into this thing and everybody was suspicious. First of all, they thought I was from the Internal Revenue out to get them or something else. And then I was exploiting a resource that they could not. I could go out on a crab boat and they'd shake out the crabs and I'd pick out the starfish and the brittle stars and the fish that were interesting and everything else and bring them back alive. And then all of a sudden I was able to buy a truck or another outboard motor. And that, so it split off right there between those that accepted it and liked it and even went to work and helped collect specimens and, you know, run seawater lines and all that. And the others that hated my guts, and they're still there, and they still hate my guts. And they don't. They're all dead. But now it's handed down to their grandchildren. So, you know, it continues. However, the amount of people that love gull specimen and the people that come by and get excited with it and the people in town who appreciate this thing being there because it's a – in its own funky way, it's really a world-class organization. I'll say that because like National
Geographic. Hold your thoughts. Hold your thoughts. This is one of those times we got to take a break. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I am having a delightful discussion with Jack Rudlow. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this is Father's Day, and we salute Jack Rudlow, co-founder of Gulf Specimen Marine Lab. Jack, what were the biggest obstacles, whether they were financial or environmental or even political, that you have had to endure, I guess, through the GSML? I mean, how did you do it?
Every single one of those things you mentioned and many, many more were obstacles. There's been nothing in this whole thing that hasn't been difficult, from learning how to pump seawater from the bay into tanks and keep things alive and keep specimens going there, to having all kinds of politics where the Wakaba County Commission tried to petition the state to take away our permits and try to shut us down and rip our seawater lines out of the bay because I objected to development and the destructions of wetlands, as I object to their endless tree cutting that's going on right now. And I don't know, what is all the others? Well, the scientific thing. Don't forget, I have a high school education. Well, I'm also a jellyfish master in China, but that's another set thing. But as far as my highest and best degree is Leon High School. How does that sit with PhDs that have been, spending all these years in school and get the, you know, grants and everything else, and here comes this obnoxious kid stomping around the salt marshes, getting specimens named after him and making discoveries and connecting to all sorts of other things. I didn't always get warm friends that way. But I also got a huge number of scientists and researchers and museum people that have been strong supporters and have kept Gulf Specimen going through all these years. So there's been obstacles, but I'm thinking there's obstacles. I couldn't get insurance on this place. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a time they were going to burn the place down, and that was one reason. But nevertheless, you know, it was any time you go to get any kind of insurance to do anything, we didn't fit. I couldn't get financing, except I finally, through the Lewis State Bank, managed to work out something where I would have the checks mailed from the universities directly to them in order to get any money. I mean, it was that, it was just endless, endless problem after problem. Yeah. But I just hunkered down and fought through each and every one of them and continue to fight through the ones, the present ones that are going on right now with our signage and graphics.
Well, Hunter, you've had a front row seat to this organization. What's something about Gulf Specimen Marine Lab that outsiders would never fully understand?
I mean, I've been coming here since I was very small. And yes, the place changes a lot, but it always stays the same in the same way. You know, the heart's always there. It doesn't matter who's leading your tour. It's somehow it's always people who care about the mission here and care about the animals and want to support what Jack has built over all these years. And I've seen it from the time I was really small up until now working here. You know, everyone, even with all of the problems, everyone's always come out to support this organization and to, you know, support the mission that we're trying to execute here.
Cypress, will you share something about your father that the public, you know, they might see, but they don't really know what's going on behind the scenes? So I think he's fascinating.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people will call him a curmudgeon, grumpy, confrontational. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, that's really not what he is. When he sees something that he believes is right, he sticks to his guns, and then he doesn't back down. But if he sees that he's wrong, he's very quick to apologize and fix that. And that's because at the end of the day, he believes and he's doing what's right, not what public pressure is. And for somebody that can walk an entire lifetime and not cave into society in this moment of pressure from the social norms to, you know, let's build this new development or let's do this, you know, big construction project. But to keep in mind, he keeps in mind, you know, the beauty of, you know, nature and the small animals and trees that no one else really thinks of. And a lot of these projects that I've seen been built over the years, you always see they put in a new shopping mall and in another 50 years, it's ugly, it's dated, where they'd have just tried to keep that beautiful nature and the overall naturalness that he's fought so hard for over the years. It becomes the biggest asset over a lifetime. And that's kind of where it's not that he's trying to be a jerk, but he's actually believes in his mission, which is to protect nature. And that's just been an honor of mine to be his son and see it firsthand. A lot of these people don't understand that. Now, a lot of these people in this town that have always been trying to burn them out now have come to me and him, especially during the last hurricane, and thanked him for all the trees that he saved because it kept the wind from smashing their houses down when we almost got hit. So that's a perfect example of one of those unforeseen things that over time of just protecting nature. So I wouldn't call it a martyr, but somebody who's passionate about what they believe in. And very few people are that.
Jack, did you ever think this would become a place where thousands of children would come to learn?
Oh, God, yes. I never doubt that. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, it's not about Jack. It's not about me. And it's not about any one individual here. It is about the experience. And I was at an intern appreciation dinner, and someone asked me why I do it. And I told them, I do it because at the end of the day, my boss is that little 5-year-old picking up that starfish. And when their face lights up and they're experiencing life for the first time and the amazing magic that is the ocean, that is what I work for. And that's not any one individual. That is what makes the ocean a magical place. And that's why we're all here, is because we all love this ocean. And the more people I can get to love the ocean, the better the world will be. And I truly do believe that. And I don't have to get anyone to do it. It's in our blood, just like the salt's in our blood. This is what's in the blood of the human race. We came from the ocean, and hopefully one day we'll return to it. So that's what I believe.
Okay. Now we have some interns joining us, correct?
Yes. Hi.
Okay.
Hello.
Yes. Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hi, I'm Livia.
Okay.
I graduated last May with my BA in biology and my BS in environmental science from Elon University. Hi, I'm Rebecca. I also graduated last spring with my bachelor's in science in marine studies at Oregon State University.
Okay. How did you get there? How did you get to Gulf Specimen Marine Lab? And that goes to both of you.
Once I graduated, I was just trying to figure out internships related in the marine science field. I wasn't sure exactly what field of marine science I wanted to go into, so I was doing a lot of internet searches, seeing what's out there. My plan right now is just to try to get as much experience in the field as I can. So I found Gulf Specimen, and it looks like an amazing opportunity. I've been here and I'm really enjoying it, learning a lot, so I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here.
So what have you been involved in? What do you do? What are you doing?
We do a lot here. We help out with the turtle rehabilitation. So we came right after the cold stun when they had 600 turtles, but we did see the tail end of it. And we're still working on some patients here. So we get to administer meds for them, do their x-rays, weigh them. We also do a lot of feeding. So it's really interesting to learn what each animal can and can't eat and what can be put together in different tanks. We're learning a lot about just water quality and different ways that everything has to get run and how everything works together in the aquarium. We do a lot of tours. I love leading tours. The kids get really excited about everything, and we get to kind of make it our own. So if I know a fun fact about an octopus or a lionfish, it's really interesting to get the kids excited about stuff like that versus just spewing information at them. And it's interactive too, because they get to touch things and they can pick up fiddler crabs and horseshoe crabs, and they get really excited to touch things they wouldn't normally get to.
Cypress, what was it like growing up at the Gulf Specimen Marine Lab as your back? I guess it was just your backyard.
It was pretty neat, actually.
I'm sure.
I remember being a kid, and I would give tours to local people that were visiting the aquarium, and me and my buddy, and we'd earn enough to get a tip at the end of the day to get, a candy bar or something like that. And that was kind of where I was like, hey, this is kind of neat. And then watching it grow over the years has been neat because I can always be challenged. I can always learn something. There's always something new to learn, if it's a managing a grant, or if it's rebuilding a seawater system, or if it's lecturing to every aquarium in the United States at a conference, which I just did last week. This keeps my brain occupied. And then at the same time, I don't know what I would do if I had to like manage something like a Ruby Tuesdays or something like that, because I've never been around it. This is second nature to me. This is my world at the end of the day.
So you
And
always knew you would take over, or did that decision just kind of evolve?
no, Now, I had dreams of doing other things, but when my mom got sick, the lab was very much needing new roofs. There was a leaky roof, and I had to make a decision of, go into this or try to finish up my bachelor's degree in humanities. And well, there's not a big workforce demand for humanity degrees out there, so. And then I could see the importance of it. I could see how much people care and how much they care about the animals and the experience, and then how important it really is. And I knew that I had to make sure this continues in its mission of keeping the doors open so that we can have this environment that people can come and learn, be it an intern trying to get their way into the marine biology world or that. 8 or 10 year old kid feeding a stingray for the first time. So that wasn't even a choice. That was, this isn't too important to let die. We have to keep it going. And that's the decision I made. And I really haven't looked back since.
Okay, Jack, what is harder, building something from scratch or letting it go?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm kind of glad to let it go. Because 60 years or so has kind of run its course, and I've run my course. I'm not going to be around too much longer from all this wonderful prostate cancer and that stuff. But letting it go has been difficult in some ways. Cypress and I enjoy duking it out and yelling at each other. And I think someone once said, if you're
Work in
gonna
progress.
the work in progress, someone said, if you're gonna work with a son or something, the way to work with family members, one of them moves to the other side of the world. But we eventually come up with ways to get things done, and they do get done. And then if it comes to working on fundraising, I'm looking at the interns and Cypress and what they have done with these fundraisers. Years ago we had sharks in Chablis, and then recently we had this mermaids and mimosas or whatever it was. And the outpouring of the people that came to this thing, and then the silly costumes we had for Halloween, and dancing, big dancing starfishes and squids, in uniforms, or people swimming around in the tank or getting in the tank dressed as the creature from the Black Lagoon. Andy used to say, if you can't have fun with it, don't do it. And that was the whole thing with Gulf Specimen. It was to have fun with it. And that might mean, I don't know, bouncing around out in the ocean and pulling up crab traps and tagging, 5 boxes of pinching blue crabs and getting your fingers mauled in the process, or just dragging shrimp nets and all that sort of thing.
Well,
It's fun. It's
you've
work,
worked
but
on
it's fun.
everything. You've worked on everything from the seaweed research to sea turtle rescue. What project stands out the most?
That's a good one. There's a lot of big unfinished business with electric rays. All right. This has been sort of something that I bumped into. The first time I was on a shrimp boat out of Caribel, and we're talking about in 1961, and they pulled up the net, and there's all these things that are on the deck, and I had no idea what that was. And I said, there's this round fish there flipping around on the bottom, and said, and then I asked the other deckhand, what's that? And he says, oh, that's a wish fish. So I picked it up and got a rattling electric shock, and said, you wish you never touched it, right?
It
Yeah. But here's this fish that empowers embodies lightning strikes in the universe, and it's underwater, and it stuns its prey, and it manages to slurp worms out and do all sorts of interesting things. And they also take magnetic crystals from sand grains and work it into their inner ears next to their brains. All right. All this came about with a large research project we did with Howard Hughes Medical Institutes back in the 80s. But it's still largely unfinished business. There's another fish called an electric stargazer that buries in the sand, and nobody ever sees one hardly. But when you if this thing decides to bite you, it'll you know, about
You'll
almost
know.
snap your neck, and it only produces a bolt, which is ridiculous. But I mean, so there's one, that's the one I would like to deal with. So if someone would like to give us about $3 or $4 million to go ahead,
Okay.
we will develop
Ooh,
a
it
new
might get.
energy source, and we will create another Starship Enterprise, which looks like an
Okay.
electric ray, which is powered by the dilithium crystals by Mr.
Okay.
Scott and so on.
Well, Cypress,
Blah blah. But
let me get to Cypress right quick. We're going to run out of time. I wanted to ask him, can you recall a moment when the roles reversed, where the son became the teacher?
oh, that was always just a natural,
Oh.
natural talent. It was all like that.
Yeah.
No, not really. That's
Okay.
still a work in progress too. You know, it's like there's always something to learn from Jack.
Okay.
Even when it comes to just being able to stand the test of time and to show that, you know, you do this every day, you get dragged down by the day-to-day operations, but then I watch him do that, and then he walks in and sees some animal like a sea turtle that comes in that is maybe a shark attack or something, but he can still
Wow.
see that passion and that interest there.
Well, hold
And
your
that's
thoughts.
something I still
Hold your thoughts, because we're going to take a brief break. You're tuned into 411 Teen, and we feature Jack Rudlow and the Gulf Specimen Marine Lab. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Some kids collect toys. This one collects facts about sea creatures. At just 10 years old, this Green Street Friends School student from Philadelphia already has a passion that runs as deep as the ocean itself. After multiple visits to the Gulf Specimen Marine Lab, he's hooked, dreaming, learning, and already thinking like a future marine biologist. With a big curiosity, a quick mind, and a true love for animals, he's proof that you are never too young to dive into what fascinates you. Commentator Remy Wimmer reminds us that curiosity isn't bound by age, it's fueled by opportunity.
Hello everyone, I am Remy Wimmer, and I go to Green Street Friends School in Philadelphia. I really love marine wildlife. I am going to tell you guys about my personal experience at the Marine Gulf Specimen Lab and its founder, Jack Rudlow. I think that the Marine Gulf Specimen Lab is a great aquarium. One reason I love the aquarium is because it has activities for all ages. For example, the touch tanks. The touch tanks are tanks with crabs, sea squirts, urchins, and more. Both kids and adults like them for their ability to create bonds on a physical level. Few aquariums have touch tanks, and the touch tanks at the Marine Gulf Specimen Lab are kind of special. I think one of the reasons the touch tanks are so rare is that it is very hard to go out and get the appropriate animals that are still wildlife for touching. Most aquariums are not willing to do that, but almost all the animals at the entire aquarium are collected by a small team guided and taught by Jack Rudlow. Jack and or his team went out and collected 70% of the animals from the Gulf. Almost all of the animals at the aquarium are animals or offspring of animals from the Gulf. Anyway, back to the aquarium. In my opinion, the touch tanks are a great activity for kids 10 to 110. There are enclosed tanks or look tanks with cool creatures, and also there are info tablets on some of the look tanks that provide great information about the animals. Another reason I think that it is so great is that it is outdoorsy. Most of the structures are just pillars supporting roofs. Of course, the gift shop, bathrooms, and staff buildings are obviously fully enclosed. But still, most of the lab is outside. I like the outdoorsy feel because I love being outside. One of my favorite outdoor structures is the horseshoe crab tank. I like the horseshoe crab tank because the horseshoe crabs are not afraid of humans, so they will play with you if you play with them. The crabs will splash you, which is refreshing, but they will run away if you treat them wrong. Thank you for listening, and I hope you learned something about how Jack Rudlow's amazing accomplishments in life bring us all joy with his aquarium. Happy Father's Day.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
If you're just tuning in, this is 411 Teen, and I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. This hour, we featured Jack Rudlow and Gulf Specimen Marine Laboratories in Panacea, Florida. This is just really a treat, and I want to again extend my thanks to Jack and your son and Hunter and the interns. Jack, you're currently facing stage 4 prostate cancer. How has that shaped the way you think about life's work?
Looking forward to the next adventure, let's put it that way. I'm hoping that if there is an afterlife or something like that, that I got a whole bunch of questions that need to be answered. A whole bunch of them for everything else. Why sensitive plants close their leaves, why the electric rays do mine magnetic crystals, blah, 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 why there's so many species, and what's the depths. And I'm also looking forward, maybe there's another lifetime in another place, on another planet, and oceans that are there that didn't have to be explored, and learning all kinds of new things. I'm just absolutely enthralled with the diversity of this planet, and I have such a dislike for the people that are brutalizing it and chopping down the trees and destroying all of God's wonders. I hope they hope they're going to have a good time when they go on the other side to deal with something that has worked so hard to, or maybe so easy to create the complexity of this universe and this world and all the marvelous things that are in it. So how do I look at it? Everybody, you know, worries a little bit about death, but I looked at all the stuff that I've done, the coral reefs that I've been done, you know, diving in Madagascar, catching, you know, stinging jellyfish. I had a jellyfish named after me, the sea wasp, basically, that I discovered in Madagascar, and just trawling up things from the ocean depths, like the giant sea roach, and the ability to talk about it. I mean, the ability. I've been 4 times on the NBC Today Show, Good Morning America, National Public Radio, front page of the Wall Street Journal twice, plus book reviews, New York Times, all of that stuff. I mean, and to see, you know, big article about me, 1970 in Sports Illustrated called Panacea for a Salty Yankee. that's been an amazing life. I mean, it's kind of a blessed life in a lot of ways, and I'm able to do that. But I had to fight for it every single inch of the way to be able to publish the books, to learn to write, and to learn how to write, if I did, which is basically, I think it was Emerson said that easy reading is damn hard writing. And right now, to my last breath of which I'm there, I'm still sitting at the computer pounding out stories about starting the jellyfish industry. And just a lot of my experiences in putting it out. And I put it on Facebook all the time. It's no longer I'm trying to make a living at writing or whatever. It's a time to just basically disseminate and say what's there and leave something of legacy, just like Anne did with all her books, you know, and there's still people that can read Butterflies on a Sea Wind and Zen on a Wild Country. And the more I can leave behind in a legacy like that, the happier I am. So when the time comes to cash in, I hope I'll be smiling.
Well, what misconceptions do people have about marine ecosystems that you've tried to correct?
Well, I can't say it's not unlimited, that they either can just take and take, but I can understand a fisherman's point of view. You go out there with a net, you drop your net down, you catch nothing. Next time time you go out, you drop down and you load down with everything else. So there's this beneficent ocean that is going to give and give and give. So therefore, you think you can take and take and take. You can also think, okay, I can fill in the wetlands, I can destroy all that, and I'll still have all this wonderful fishing. You know, I can manipulate the water, I can dam it, I can, you know, butcher it, mm-hmm. and still have everything I want. And I can take all the oysters I possibly want and keep going. And that's a heck of a misconception. And if you go back to the primitive cultures of Native Americans and other cultures around, they went to the ocean and said, thank you. You know, they know they're going to take things and everything else, but they have respect. But what I'm seeing with the, like the realtors gobbling up Panacea and the real estate craze that's going on in Wakaba County and the insanity here, and a county commission that just allows the butchering of trees left and right, I don't know what to say. I can say that we can talk ourselves blue in the face, but the way the structure is, they can continue to butcher the place and smile and get away with it when, quite frankly, I don't want to say what I think should happen to them, but nevertheless, they're doing terrible, terrible, terrible things. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that we get a society that gets together to stop it. A little passionate.
Cypress. What does your father mean to you, not just as a founder of GSML, but as a father?
How do you answer that? It's your dad. You only get one of them. Like, it's your dad. It's one of your best teacher. Like, you don't get another dad. And I've just been very lucky to have a good dad over life. And yeah, he's just like my mom. It's an honor to have them in my life, period. And there will be nothing like them ever again in my life. But I'm very grateful for every second I get. I've always struggled with school and learning disabilities and all that, but my best two teachers was my mom and my dad, especially my dad. When he's like, don't worry about it, just keep trying. And yeah, I mean, he's my best teacher. That's what it comes down to. And all we can ask for in this world mm-hmm. is a great teacher.
And I want to say, I think it's his brother, Sky Rudlow, who has trained fight wind in Tallahassee, mixed martial arts, feels very much the same way, except that he chose to not be involved in the total insanity down here. So, but okay. You should do one with him someday.
Okay. Hunter, from where you sit, how has the Gulf Coast even environment changed since you have been involved?
Even, you know, just like Jack's saying, we're seeing, you know, destruction of so much mm-hmm. woodland habitat, you know, marsh habitat all in our area, because we're a nice undeveloped piece of land in Florida, which everyone thinks they can take advantage of. It's really sad. But the more people that we can get to come to Gulf Specimen and teach them why we need to save this animal. Yeah, a starfish is really cool to look at. Why is it important to your life? Why should you care about a horseshoe crab? All these things are tied together into the fish that you eat, you know, the clean beach that you get to go see. And being able to educate, you know, anybody who comes in the door here is really just an amazing opportunity.
Well, in a place that's driven by passion and love, what do the hard days look like? What are the hardest days? And I guess I say that to you, Jack, and to you, Hunter, and to you, Cypress. I mean, because it just seems like it's just always bubbling and things are always going on and it's just so exciting. Do you have hard days?
Ann used to call it dumb animal work, you know? You're sitting there with stacks of, you know, packing up horseshoe crabs and anemones and, you know, plastic bags, filling with oxygen, packing them into things. And here comes a school bus and here comes, you know, the next group of, 60 kids charging in there with another school bus waiting behind it. Meanwhile, the pumps are breaking down. Meanwhile,
There's 600 sea turtles coming in. That was all happening at once. Just because one part of our, you know, just because our pump breaks, or, you know, we have a lot of biological supply orders, or we have a lot of field trips one day, we don't have to stop doing all of the other things to make this place work. It doesn't slow down. So it can get hard, but it's worth it. I mean, you have those days where you see the kids light up, you know, you have these fundraisers where you see the community come out and support everything. We have, yeah, our memberships are wonderful. We have, you know, these people who come back year after year after year, and bring their kids, you know, every weekend, every other, you know, constantly, because we're always changing and they always get to learn something new. And it's always, you know, a pleasure for them to come visit. We had a family membership when I was a kid, and I came here so much, and now I'm here all the time. But even though the days can be very, very hard, and your work, you know, like when we had the sea turtles, we all were here for 10 hours for 10 days in a row. And it's very exhausting, but then you get to see these animals go back to the wild, or you get to see a kid light up. And it's all worth it at the end.
What keeps you, so personally committed to this work?
I've always just been, I've loved coming here. It was, you know, the place that I was the most excited to go to as a kid, that I was, when you're picking a job, they say, like, you know, do something that makes you happy, and then it doesn't have to feel like work. So that's why I come here and keep doing this, because it, even if the days are really hard, it doesn't always feel like work.
Okay. Jack, if a young person is listening today and they're feeling sort of like an outsider or a failure, what would you say to them?
Philosophers said, follow your bliss, basically. And the way to do that is, what is it you're interested in? Shoot from the hip. And I've had students in here saying, oh, I can't do anything else and this and that. I'm having this and that problem. The graduate students, all that. I says, what do you want to do? What are you interested in? What really triggers, you know? And I'd start building. I said, I don't care. Just tell me in one word, what is it you want to do? This one girl was saying, well, I just worked at a lab with the bacteriology, and that was fascinating. She's now one of the big honchos in, I don't know, some major biomedical lab, basically doing all that sort of thing. It's whatever really turns you on is your directing, guiding light is there. And I don't care if you're, if you want to be a diesel mechanic and you like messing with diesel engines and all that, and that's what you want to do and hanging around that, then do it. Mm-hmm. Go to school, learn how to do it, or become an apprentice is really the best way to do it. Connect with people, but know what they're doing and like what they're doing, and just pick it up, but stay focused. And don't say, I want to be a fireman today, and then go off and do, I want to do, you know, I don't know, computers, this and that and the other. Learn all the skills you can, because, you know, I had this one professor here from one of our benefactors and all that stuff. And he was down in a ditch digging laying pipes here. And he was the dean of the University of Alabama and a Harvard. And a friend of mine came over, just sort of looks down and he says, Dean, what are you doing down in this ditch laying pipe when you're the headed up in this next day? So his name Bernie Sloan. He throws down a shovel and he says, let me tell you something. He says, every single skill I have learned, every job that I have done is all pulled together to work for Gulf Specimen, because it takes it all. So same thing, you know, and be interested. You know, that's why these girls here, they're here because they want to be here, but I want to spend time with them because they're interested. And I'll take the time, just as people did with me when I was a kid. I had mentors. I want to be a mentor. And I want, for anyone listening, go get a mentor. Go get as many mentors as you can. That's my advice.
What do you want the next generation of scientists and adventurers to know? Make it quick.
Connections. It's all connected. Basically, the land, the sea, the water, the geology, and the atmosphere are all connected. And what you do here affects what you do there. And that's not something that's just spoken lightly. It would be it needs to be understood. So if it would be understood, all these greedy realtors and people that are destroying Wakaba County would be sent off on a barge somewhere, because they would, because the new generation would say, we don't put up with this stuff. We don't allow it. And because we know that we connect with the universe and with the world and with the air and with the water, And that's the generation that I want to see come along.
Well, thanks. Cypress, could you sum up Jack Redlow in one word? What would it be? Just one word.
Box jellyfish.
Okay. Well,
he's named after a box jellyfish, okay. And I think that's very fitting.
Okay. Well, it's time out for this edition of 411 Teen. Some people inherit success. Others build it from scratch. From the back of a rusted station wagon to a place where science comes alive, for thousands, Jack Redlow didn't create a laboratory. He created a legacy, one that lives on through family, through curiosity, and through every young mind inspired by the ocean. On this Father's Day, we honor not just the work, but the man behind it. Many thanks to Jack, Cypress, Hunter, and the interns for sharing their story. And to my listeners, always much appreciation for the privilege of your time and ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Teen at wfsu.org.